and then I'd fire you, I said. His eyes came back, slow and lazy.
You can't fire me. I don't work for you, or Beck.
So who do you work for?
Somebody.
Has somebody got a name? He shook his head.
No dice.
I kept my hands in my pockets and eased my way around the machine gun, headed for the door. We straight now? I said. He looked at me, said nothing, but he was calm. His morning dosages must have been well balanced. Mrs. Beck is off limits, right?
While you're here, you won't be here forever.
I hope not, I thought. His telephone rang. The outside line, I guessed. I doubted if Elizabeth or Richard would be calling him from the house. The ring was loud in the silence. He picked it up and said his name. Then he just listened. I heard a trace of a voice in the earpiece, distant and indistinct, with plastic peaks and resonances that obscured what was being said. The voice spoke for less than a minute. Then the call was over. He put the phone down and moved his hand quite delicately and used the flat of his palm to set the machine gun swinging gently on its chain. I realized it was a conscious imitation of the thing I had done with the heavy bag down in the gym on our first morning together. He grinned at me.
I'm watching you. I'll always be watching you.
I ignored him and opened the door and stepped outside. The rain hit me like a fire hose. I leaned forward and walked straight into it, held my breath, and had a very bad feeling in the small of my back until I was all the way through the 40-yard arc the back window could cover. Then I breathed out. Not Beck, not Elizabeth, not Richard, not Pauling. No dice. Dominique Cole said no dice to me the night we had our first beer. Something unexpected had come up, and I had to rain check the first evening, and then she rain checked my makeup date, so it was about a week before we got together, maybe 8 days. Sergeants drinking with captains was difficult on post back then, because the clubs were rigorously separate, so we went out to a bar in town. It was the usual kind of place, long and low, 8 pool tables, plenty of people, plenty of neon, plenty of jukebox noise, plenty of smoke. It was still very hot. The air conditioners were running flat out and getting nowhere. I was wearing fatigue pants and an old T-shirt because I didn't own any personal clothes. Cole arrived wearing a dress. It was a simple A-line, no sleeves, knee-length, black with little white dots on it. Very small dots, not like big polka dots or anything. A very subtle pattern. How's Frasconi working out? I asked her.
Tony? He's a nice guy.
She didn't say anything more about him. We ordered Rolling Rocks, which suited me because it was my favorite drink that summer. She had to lean very close to talk because of the noise. I enjoyed the proximity, but I wasn't fooling myself. It was the decibel level making her do it, nothing else. And I wasn't going to try anything with her. No formal reason not to. There were rules back then, I guess, but there were no regulations yet. The notion of sexual harassment was slow coming to the Army. But I was already aware of the potential unfairness. Not that there was any way I could help or hurt her career. Her jacket made it plain she was going to make Master Sergeant and then First Sergeant like night follows day. It was only a matter of time. Then came the leap up to E-9 status, Sergeant Major. That was hers for the taking, too. After that, she would have a problem. After Sergeant Major came Command Sergeant Major, and there's only one of those in each regiment. After that came Sergeant Major of the Army, and there's only one of those, period. So she would rise and then stop, whatever I said about it.
We have a tactical problem, or strategic, maybe.
Why?
The pointy head, Garowski? We don't think it's blackmail in the sense that he's got some terrible secret or anything. Looks to us more like straightforward threats against his family. Coercion rather than blackmail.
How can you tell?
His file is clean as a whistle. He's been background checked to hell and back. That's why they do it. They're trying to avoid the possibility of blackmail.
Was he a Red Sox fan?
She shook her head. Yankees. He's from the Bronx. Went to the High School of Science there.
Okay. I like him already.
But the book says we should bust him right now.
What's he doing?
We've seen him taking papers out of the lab.
Are they still doing the Sabo?
She nodded. But they could publish the Sabo design in Stars and Stripes, and it wouldn't tell anybody anything. So the situation isn't critical yet.
What does he do with the papers?
He dead drops them in Baltimore.
Have you seen who picks them up? She shook her head.
No dice, she said.
What are you thinking about the pointy head?
I don't want to bust him. I think we should get whoever it is off his back and leave him be. He's got two baby girls.
What does Frasconi think?
He agrees.
Does he? She smiled.
Well, he will. But the book says different.
Forget the book.
Really?
Direct order from me, I said. I'll put it in writing if you want. Go with your instinct. Trace the chain the whole way to the other end. If we can, we'll keep this Garowski guy out of trouble. That's my usual approach with Yankees fans. But don't let it get away from you.
I won't.
Wrap it up before they get done with the Sabo, or we'll have to think of another approach.
Okay.
Then we talked about other things and drank a couple more beers. After an hour, there was something good on the jukebox, and I asked her to dance. For the second time that night, she told me, no dice. I thought about that phrase later. Clearly, it came from crapshooter's jargon. It must have originally meant foul, like a call, like the dice hadn't been properly rolled. No dice, like a baseball umpire calling a grounder over the bag. Foul ball. Then much later, it became just another negative, like no way, no how, no chance. But how far back in its etymology was she mining? Had she meant a plain no? Or was she calling a foul? I wasn't sure. I was completely soaked when I got back to the house, so I went upstairs and took possession of Duke's room and toweled off and dressed in a fresh set of his clothes. The room was at the front of the house, more or less central. The window gave me a view west all the way along the driveway. The elevation meant I could see over the wall. I saw a Lincoln Town Car in the far distance. It was heading straight for us. It was black. It had its headlights on because of the weather. Paulie came out in his slicker and opened the gate well ahead of time so it didn't have to slow down. He came straight through, moving fast. The windshield was wet and smeared, and the wipers were beating back and forth. Paulie had been expecting it. He had been alerted by the phone call. I watched it approach until it was lost to sight below me. Then I turned away.